I remember the day I finally got my driver's license like it was yesterday. I was nearly 18, almost a 2 full years after my friends had gotten their licenses, and I was ready. I was so ready for the freedom it would give me. Freedom from the ever-watchful eyes of my parents, freedom from having to catch rides from my friends, and most importantly, freedom from the bus. Freedom, as an idea of value, permeates our culture. It shapes our national identity, and for Unitarian Universalist folks, our religious identity as well. And yet the word freedom is really just a symbol. It's something that means different things to different people. Liberals, conservatives, and moderates alike have justified all manner of wars and laws and practices in the name of protecting our freedom. Considering how crucial the concept of liberty is to American and liberal religious identity, and how the idea of freedom is being used and interpreted by the current administration to shape policy, I think it deserves a closer look. Now, from what I was taught in elementary and middle school, you'd think the founders of the United States had coined the word freedom, that they had invented the concept. After all, our country was founded on the freedom we won from British taxation, freedom from the British monarchical system. But every 4th of July, I wonder, what are we really celebrating? What does this version of America's birth story really have to do with our independence? And how does it relate to the kind of freedom our governmental leaders seem intent on pursuing today? For years, we were told by our politicians and the media that the seemingly endless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were waged to keep us safe and free from terrorists. Well, foreign terrorists. On February 7th of this year, just a couple of weeks ago, House Republican Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky's 4th District introduced a bill that would literally abolish the Department of Education, because he feels, and I quote, "Neither Congress nor the President through his appointees has the constitutional authority to dictate how and what our children must learn." Free from monarchy, free from foreign terrorism, free from federally dictated curricula. We are flooded with history and information and images of what we are supposed to be free from. But what is it that this country is free for? What is the purpose of our freedom? Our faith shares much of its history and theological development with the same Enlightenment ideas that shaped the United States Constitution. Like this country's notion of freedom, our faith is often described in terms of what we are free from, what we reject, or what we are not. Our theological history is a laundry list of doctrines we've gained freedom from, but that's true of almost every religious tradition. Most religious traditions are critiques of the traditions that came before them. So that's we're not really that different in that way. Freedom from biblical supremacy, freedom from predestination, freedom from fundamentalism, freedom from God for some. But for what purpose have we as a people of faith been bestowed this theological freedom? What are we free for? The Hebrew people seem to have asked the same question after they were liberated from slavery in Egypt. As Desmond Tutu wrote in this morning's responsive reading, "Freedom is costly." The Exodus story recounts how a people were forced to leave the only home they'd ever known, the only culture they were familiar with, the only order they understood. Tradition holds that the Hebrews had to leave Egypt so quickly they didn't even have time to let their bread rise, which is why Jews today eat matzah during Passover. The switch from bondage to liberty was swift, and there was a lot the Hebrew people had to abandon and much they had to risk to participate in God's liberation adventure. Despite these difficulties, you'd think the people would have responded to this freedom with joy. But if we remember the story, after 400 years of bondage, God sends a deliverer, ushers them safely through the Red Sea, later cares for their every need. But instead of gratitude for their newfound freedom, the people complained the whole 40 years that they spent in the wilderness. Now, back when I had just gotten my driver's license, I also learned the shadow side of freedom. When I was driving home from work one day, I got in a minor fender bender. And that experience taught me that there is more to freedom than just the fun of being independent. Freedom also brings with it a lot of responsibility. Responsibility I wasn't quite so sure I was ready for anymore. The Hebrew people seem to have made a similar discovery. They learned that freedom from something doesn't make for automatic happiness or success. In fact, freedom presented the Hebrew people with a host of new responsibilities and struggles. Now, as a liberated people, all of the responsibility for success or failure, justice or tyranny, prosperity or famine suddenly rested on their own shoulders. Now, we focus a lot of our national attention on the freedom the United States gained from British rule. But freedom articulated only in terms of what we are free from can have dangerous consequences. Focus on freedom from without an articulated purpose for ultimately results in a repeat of the mistakes of past oppressors. It is sadly ironic. Early Americans who once fought for freedom from the tyranny of England turned around and enslaved and interred thousands of Africans and people indigenous to the Americas in an unjust economic and political system cloaked in the guise of a liberated democracy and fueled by the arrogance of manifest destiny. These horrific pieces of our national past, along with the continuing unequal status of women, LGBT persons, people with disabilities, and the growing vilification of undocumented immigrants, were and are possible because the United States has focused mainly on freedom from outside interference, freedom from oversight. We've considered the cost of our national freedom, and it's just important for us to take a serious look at the potential cost of our religious freedom as well. By focusing on the freedom we have from fundamentalism, from orthodoxy, from Christian doctrine, the Unitarian Universalist tradition runs a risk of robbing our heritage of what it affirms. David Bumbaugh, a humanist theologian and former preaching professor at Meadville Lombard School for the Ministry, makes a similar point. He writes, "In the process of defending against the beliefs we reject, we have lost the vocabulary of reverence, the ability to speak of that which is sacred, holy, of ultimate importance to us, the language that would allow us to enter once more into critical dialogue with others." Unitarian Universalist theologian Tondaka speaks to a more concrete cost of our religious freedom. She writes, "No one is more aware of the fallout from this problem than our children. They grow up and leave our church because they find so little within it that makes sense or sustains them. And so our congregations survive as the church of strangers, the place for dissidents who have left their original traditions for doctrinal reasons, and for those who seek a religious tradition in which indefinition is its defining attraction." Definition as anti-Egyptian distracted the Hebrews from their true identity as a people loved and liberated by their God. Definition as anti-monarchy, anti-outside interference, and anti-foreign terrorism has distracted the United States from its true identity, the identity that, in the words of Emma Lazarus, exists to serve the tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to break free. And definition as anti-orthodoxy, anti-doctrine has distracted Unitarian Universalism at times from promoting what we do affirm, from growing into the radically inclusive, justice-making body of faith that we are called to become. While Unitarian Universalists are sometimes considered to be anti-religious, the church where you can believe whatever you want, a complete absence of boundaries actually isn't freedom, but chaos. Having no clear, articulated sense of who we are as a theologically free people of faith simply creates empty space in which dominant voices drown out everyone else. But true freedom, life-affirming freedom, the freedom that forms our purpose, lives where justice is lived. The Hebrew people were freed so that they might live into a community free for the purpose of serving the needs of the weak before the whims of the powerful. The United States gained freedom for the purpose of creating a society in which lineage matters less than commitment, and all people are allowed and encouraged to contribute their voices to the decision-making process. Unitarian Universalists are free for the purpose of building the beloved community, where the inherent dignity of all members of the human family is affirmed, where the truth of the love that won't let us go is proclaimed, and where our place as humble stewards, not owners, of the earth is lived out. With the gift of freedom comes the responsibility to use that freedom for the purpose of making justice for ourselves and all of humanity. We each are called to be good stewards of the theological freedom given to us by our Unitarian Universalist heritage, to find space in our hearts to love and accept people of many beliefs, to find space in our heads to accept that despite our personal rigorous spiritual reflection, we might be wrong, and to find space in our lives to embrace the never-ending need to learn and be stretched. If we truly want to become the faith movement the world needs us to be, we can't continue to define ourselves as an alternative to religion. We are called to be more than the tiny movement, heaven help us, that we currently are. And I am proud to serve here in this congregation with so many people of so many different beliefs and non-beliefs that embody the best of our faith, by using their freedom to serve the needs of the marginalized and most vulnerable. Last Sunday, I was humbled to see so many of you at St. Mark's Church in Richmond for the Immigrant Rights Workshop. It was incredibly moving to see nearly 200 people of all ages in that gymnasium eagerly learning what their rights are and how they can protect themselves and their families and their neighbors from deportation. It gave me hope to see resistance growing in our community, and it broke my heart that this kind of resistance is even necessary in 2017. So when UUCB member Kathy Rye texted me on Tuesday afternoon to see if I could join her in advocating for sanctuary city status that evening at the Albany City Council meeting, I was grateful my calendar was open and I knew I had to say yes. And I'm glad that I did, because several of you were there and asked me to speak to the council during the time allotted for audience comments. I'd like to share with you this morning the comments that I shared at that meeting. I told the council, my religious tradition is rooted in a large part in a theological idea known as the preferential option for the poor, meaning that more than anything else, people of faith are called to serve the poor, the marginalized, those oppressed and ignored and left out by dominant society. We're called to do this not because it makes us feel good or noble or righteous, but because teachings and scriptures from many religious traditions tell us that the perspectives and experiences of the oppressed imbue them with special blessing. Jesus of Nazareth put it simply when he proclaimed, "Blessed are the poor." I am here today, I said, because residents of Albany, who are also my parishioners, are concerned about the culture of fear that their family and friends and neighbors may experience if this city chooses not to become a sanctuary city. I'm here today, I said, to express my gratitude to the police chief for his commitment to community policing, because people who are afraid of being deported are unlikely to report crimes or seek the help of police if they are in some way victimized. I am here today because I don't want to have to console children, spouses, and family members in my congregation whose friends and loved ones will never come home because they've been swept up in an ICE raid. Whether the arrest and deportation of undocumented people is permissible by law or being pressured with the threat of withholding federal dollars seems to me to be entirely beside the point. History is rife with examples of injustices carried out through the legal system. For me, and I think for many people of faith, the question is about our moral values. Do we want to tell our great-grandchildren that we failed to do everything within our power to prevent our community's resources from being used to help arrest and deport hardworking, integral members of our community? Do we want to be in any way complicit in the terrorization of these vulnerable people, most of whom fled here as a result of our country's foreign economic policies, and who don't have legal documentation because of our country's inefficient immigration process? I know I don't. I want to be able to tell my great-grandchildren that I did everything within my power as a citizen, as a person of faith, and as a member of the clergy to hold my local, state, and national leaders accountable in building communities that value human lives, whatever their race, ethnicity, citizenship status, or religion. I want to be able to reassure my sons that their friends at preschool won't suddenly disappear because they've been taken in the night. But mostly, I want to know that I used every ounce of the energy I could to serve the God of my understanding, who has called me to serve my community's most vulnerable members. So today, my committed and courageous and beloved people, I ask you to consider if the Unitarian Universalist Church of Berkeley might join the other UU congregations around the country that have chosen to use their freedom to become sanctuary churches. While many of the cities in this region are already sanctuary cities, and the state of California is considering how it might become a sanctuary state even, this will not prevent ICE from conducting their own federal raids and deporting members of our communities. In response to this threat, UUA President Reverend Peter Morales has asked every UU congregation to consider joining the sanctuary movement. This is a movement of interfaith and immigrant communities doing what Congress and the administration refuse to do: protect and stand with immigrants facing deportation. Members pledge to protect immigrant families who face workplace discrimination or unjust deportation. Not every sanctuary church physically houses people, although this church certainly seems like it has the space to do so. Some commit instead to become trained as rapid responders, showing up to provide witness and support whenever an ICE raid begins in one of our communities. Some congregations make other commitments that help make sanctuary possible. There is a broad scope of possibilities in terms of how we could help. Now, our amazing Social Justice Council has shown great leadership this year and is continuing to discern just how we are being called to stand with the marginalized in our communities. And I encourage you to be in touch with those leaders to let them know how you feel about the possibility of this congregation joining the sanctuary movement and using its gifts to protect vulnerable members of our communities. And if you're interested in learning more about the scope of ways we could help as a sanctuary church, Elizabeth Jay has encouraged me to lift her up to all of you as a resource. Her roots in the sanctuary movement go back to the 1980s. The Reverend Rebecca Parker, former president of the Star King School for the Ministry, has written a warning. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question: what will you do with your gifts? Let us choose to bless the world. Amen.